Hey, everybody. This is a little bit of an off-topic thing, but as we move into the Deep Space Nine portion of the Star Trek podcast, I thought I'd give everybody what we're calling a taste of Patreon. Patreon, if you don't know, is a website where you can go to support the show. You go to patreon.com/thepenskyfile, and for a couple dollars a month, you get extra content like podcasts and stuff that are usually just released there. I'm going to be releasing two of them. We already released the 10 Essential TNG episodes. This one is about Event Horizon, the 1998, something like that movie. It was a sci-fi horror movie with Sam Neill and Lawrence Fishburne about a spaceship that goes to hell and back. So that's it. This is Event Horizon. If you guys are interested in this kind of stuff and you want to get more, or you just want to support the podcast, go to patreon.com/thepenskyfile and you give a couple dollars a month and you get all this stuff and more, and you get our endless, undying appreciation. Anyway, thank you guys very much for listening. Hope you enjoy. See you later.
Event Horizon, take me with you. Captain Miller, won't you take my hand?
Hey, everybody. What you just heard was a rousing tune called Event Horizon by a band which I've forgotten because Clay passed along the band.
357 Lover.
357 Lover. Classic name. Do you know anything of them other than that song?
I've listened to a couple of other songs that they've done, and they're very similar to that. They also have a song based on the movie Time Cop, which maybe we should also cover later on if we keep doing this.
Yeah, definitely. So if you guys are into sort of epic, sort of classic rock inspired, are they all movie soundtracks? Is that what they do?
No, they're just, you know, they cover whatever they, I mean, their songs cover whatever topics they feel like talking about, I guess.
But yeah.
I guess they just are really influenced by the movie Event Horizon. Well, and you should probably play that at the end of the podcast, too, to make sure it's stuck in everyone's head all day, which it definitely will be.
Yeah, it took me a couple listens. At first, I was a little appalled by it, but then after that, I was like, you know what? Anytime you can just scream Event Horizon endlessly, it's worth it. I'll put the entire track at the end. You guys can check them out. It's pretty entertaining. The video is worth watching, too, on YouTube. But yeah, we're going to talk Event Horizon. We brought it up in the last podcast, Patreon podcast. And hello, patrons. Thank you very much for your continued support. And I thought we'd talk about Event Horizon because I like Event Horizon quite a bit. it's a 1997 British-American sci-fi film directed by Paul W.S. Anderson of Mortal Kombat fame, and written by
He did this right after he did Boogie Nights, I think.
Yeah, he had enough. He wanted to do the porn scene from L.A. in the 70s, and then he wanted to do a space horror film after that, and it was in his contract.
Correct.
Yeah, Paul W.S. Anderson of Mortal Kombat fame is basically someone who does that kind of movie, if that fits the bill for him. His name, I think it's because it relates to Boogie Nights. Like, the name is similar enough to Boogie Nights where I think that he's done a better, not discography, but a better history of film that he's directed. But apparently I'm wrong about that.
I always found it really confusing when I first started, like, watching movies from this era, because there was Paul Thomas Anderson,
yep,
Wes Anderson, and Paul W.S. Anderson.
Yeah. Which is basically the Wes, with, if you just subtract the E.
Exactly. Yeah.
He adds it in there. Yeah, and they couldn't be more dissimilar, I guess, which is an interesting thing about them. But yeah, this is Event Horizon. It's a horror sci-fi movie from 1997. Clay, you said before you'd watched it once before, so this was maybe your second time, or unless you're forgetting another time.
Right. Yeah, this is only the second time I've seen it.
Okay. Yeah, it's. I guess I'll start it off by saying this movie was incredibly panned on its release, but now has something of kind of a cult following. And Wikipedia says it's similar to the cult following is similar in fashion to Blade Runner and John Carpenter's The Thing, in that they came to be more highly regarded after a couple years had passed.
I don't know about that.
I always liked this movie. I think that this movie, I guess the main criticism I think while watching this is that it feels like this movie would be really, really, really well served by a director's cut. Because I feel like we're missing a lot of information.
In what sense?
I feel that whatever they're trying to make this thematically about, like, they hint at it, but they never really get there, and you only get glimpses of a couple crew members' sort of past memories about what's going on.
Right.
So I feel what they were trying to do was that each character would have a backstory about something that they, like, regret, some kind of sin that they regret about, and the movie would sort of focus on that, and the ship is making them relive these memories. And you don't really get a lot of that. And I also think that the Weir character is really underwritten.
Yes.
To the point
where
he's
definitely.
To the point where he doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. I felt like the biggest issue, I think the biggest story issue for me with this movie is I think Weir should have been evil from the beginning.
Yep.
I get what you're saying. I guess I didn't really think about the there being more stuff. You're right. I think you're right as far as the stuff with the each character having something that from their past that they are not proud of or regret, that kind of thing is definitely there, but it's definitely touched on way too lightly for it to be as thematically important as they want it to be.
Right. Yeah.
For instance, the scene where the guy pops up out of the water while he's on fire.
Yes.
How does that scene end? Because the guy shows up on fire, and then he just then they just cut away. What's the ending of that scene?
Yeah, it cuts. It cuts to them all discussing it, and Lawrence Fishburne is like, "You're not going to believe the fucking thing I just saw." And it's like, "How did you get out of there in the first place?" Yeah, it's the guy on fire is probably my least favorite aspect, just because of the way he talks when he's like, "You left me to burn," and then he shoots fire at people. I feel there's a lot. Apparently, the movie is the movie's an hour and a half, right? And the original cut came in at 2 hours and 15 minutes. So they cut a lot out of it. And the director has gone on record saying he would add 10 to 15 minutes more back into it to improve it. But I agree that it sort of jumps around a lot between the scenes. And it feels like they've cut a lot of the connective tissue between those scenes. And they're just kind of moving from piece to piece. And for how many characters there are, so many of them don't really have much going on besides the fact that they're there and then they die eventually.
Right. I think, that's interesting that there's more there, that there was a longer cut. But I don't know. For me, I feel like it's... It feels like it leans on a nondescriptive, malicious entity being this gravity drive thing.
Yep.
And I feel like they didn't have anywhere to go with it, so they worked all these character regret backstories into it. But, like, why is that stuff being brought to the surface because of this gravity drive thing? My biggest problem with it is I wish it was more weird. You know? Like, I feel like the stuff that they end up doing is really, like, first draft creepy stuff.
Right.
Like, they're trying to get into the characters' heads by bringing up stuff from the characters' past that theoretically you should be empathizing with, but we don't, like you said, we don't know enough about it for it to really have any impact.
I think the biggest example of that is the woman Parks, who has the kid, obviously. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have no idea what she feels bad about. The kid's in a wheelchair, obviously, but they don't explain why she feels bad about him.
Well, that one at least you get a glimpse of before the story starts.
Yeah, because she's watching a video of him. And,
right.
And Miller says, "I'm sorry that we took you away from..."
Yeah, he tells her that, you know, when they're almost there.
Basically, yeah. He should have told her that at the out. That's the phone call. You're like, "Listen, I'm really sorry about this, but right. I got to call you back."
Like, that one I actually think I liked the most, because that was the one that you do get a little backstory into.
Yep.
Like, the guy on fire thing doesn't make any sense until 15 minutes later when he's like, "Oh, yeah, by the way, that guy on fire is probably because of this thing that happened on some other mission I was on."
Yeah, yep.
You know, like, if I think they really could have jacked up the weirdness factor into what the what they were seeing or what the things they were hallucinating were, instead of being so literal in what they were drawing on as far as, you know, the character stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the one thing I will say is that one of the notes that when it came back is, as well as being overlong, the studio and test audience thought that it was too gory, so they cut out a lot of the gore.
Okay.
Basically, the scenes that you see at the very end when Miller is forced to like see those quick shots of people being tortured, basically, was a much bigger part of the movie.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Well, that's another thing, that this movie's basically like Hellraiser in space.
It is Hellraiser, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's, I also, mean, it's a lot of things. It reminds me very strongly of Alien, you know, the way the ship looks.
Do you think that they saw Alien before they made this movie?
And right down to the everyone sitting around a table, at the very beginning.
That opening sequence is just, it looks like it's shot on the same set.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, they clearly love it.
In the spacesuits, are real similar. The end sequence when the rescue guys come in is basically the same sequence from the end of from the beginning of Aliens, where the rescue guys come in with the laser thing.
Yep,
it's very, very similar.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, it wears its homages on its sleeve. I guess at best you'd call them homages, and at worst you'd call them sort of ripoffs. I think they're similar enough to be obvious, but also their style, their choices that work. Like the Alien ship design is so interesting. It's like, oh yeah, it kind of looks like that again. And I don't mind looking at something that interesting, I suppose, would be the way to look at it.
Yeah, I thought the ship designs were actually, I thought the Event Horizon was pretty cool looking. I felt like they were overall fairly realistic.
Yeah.
In their design, like that space station that they're on, that's basically just a bunch of iron girders. I was like, yeah, that makes more sense to me than, you know, like Deep Space Nine does.
Right. So it's taking place in 2047, which seems almost appropriate that it would take a ship and it's dangerous for them to go to Neptune. They say like that's the farthest like anyone has ever gone, basically.
Yeah.
So it seems like timing appropriate. Wise, like maybe, you know, by 2047, maybe people would have the potential to get out there. But I like the you know, it's in between Star Trek where you can go anywhere and not going anywhere. It's like a very small, like our own solar system is sort of as far as you can possibly go.
Right.
And it does the same thing as Alien, where it just takes a very long time. It takes like 50 days, they say, to go there.
Right. Right.
So yeah, it's interesting. I like the I also have a thing for the ship names. I like the ship names in this. Event Horizon is a great name.
Yep.
And Lewis and Clark is a good rescue ship name.
Yep, yep. I think my favorite part of this movie is when I'm not entirely sure on the placement of the Event Horizon. Is it inside the atmosphere of Neptune or something?
I think so, but it doesn't... At the very beginning, it shows it sort of flying away from Neptune, and I don't understand. But I think we're supposed to assume it's in the atmosphere of Neptune.
Okay. Well, then my favorite part is when the Lewis and Clark enters the atmosphere of Neptune, and they're trying to gauge the reading on where the ship is, and we should be able to see it, but we can't see it. And then they part the clouds, and they just see in giant letters Event Horizon.
Is that it? I think it's right there. Yeah, I enjoyed that. Amy was watching it with me, and she was laughing at Commander Miller's chair, which seems like a baby bouncy chair that he sits in.
That in theory, I felt was a pretty cool idea, but it does bounce around a little bit too much to really be taken seriously.
And when they showed the video of the Event Horizon, that guy has the same chair, so it seems to be standard issue chair to have. Yeah, it seems like it has a lot of utility, but it looks a little goofy just sort of swinging around like that. And when he like dramatically turns to talk to someone else on his other side, the whole chair just kind of swivels around with him. It's a little odd. Yeah, so I mean, the basic idea here is that the Event Horizon is a experimental ship that's supposed to go faster than light by basically bending space-time. And Dr. Weir, played by Sam Neill, is the scientist who designed it. And the Event Horizon has its first maiden voyage, and like the Titanic, it just disappears. It comes back 7 years later, found a distress call was found from it in its orbit of Neptune. And they go there, and the crew finds that the crew of the Event Horizon is gone. There's some kind of mystery. There seems to be blood all over the walls, which implies a bad time. And then it turns out that the ship has some sort of malevolent force infecting it. And apparently the ship has gone to hell and come back. And now it wants to go back to hell. And for some reason, Dr. Weir is intent on going to hell as well.
Right.
I guess let's talk about Weir, who I think is the weirdest character here. And I think he doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of the whole way through. The film opens as though he's going to be the main character.
Yeah. I mean, he's not the main character, but
he's definitely the main antagonist.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, he should be, but he isn't really. I don't know. We'll get to it. Continue.
Yeah, I mean, he's portrayed early on as he has some sort of regret. He obviously misses his wife or whoever because he's got pictures of her taped up all over the bedroom that he pulls off when he wakes up.
Yep.
He starts off as sort of the nebbish scientist who is not in over his head, but he's in like a fish out of water kind of thing where he's on this rescue ship and he doesn't really know what he's doing, but he's the expert on this Event Horizon.
Mm-hmm.
So they send him out and he slowly sort of seems to fall under the spell of the ship. What is his arc? Does he know from the beginning what he's doing out there? At what point does he learn or become under the control of the ship? Is he under the control of something, or has he just gone crazy?
That's the thing, is I think that's really unclear, and I think that needs to be a lot more clear. Because, really, if you look at what's happening, there's no reason why he is the antagonist versus anybody else who is affected by the ship.
Yep.
It could very easily have been Justin, or Justin!
Baby Bear.
Yeah, where did that come from?
That also, and he calls him Mama Bear, and then even the black guy is calling him Baby Bear. Like,
do they do that before the scene in the airlock?
No, because
it was so random.
It seems like it's implying a relationship that they have. That I was like, oh right. Wow, that's kind of progressive. But no, everyone, and I don't know if in the script Justin is supposed to be like 12 years old. You know, it gives me the impression that he's super young, but he doesn't seem super young.
Right.
But anyway, back to Weir. Yeah, so you think that his characterization there is whether or not he's crazy or under control of the ship is a disappointment.
Yeah, especially once you get into all of the other backstories and things that people are... Once that becomes a common thread, I feel like that takes some focus off of his... The thing with his wife and his wife killing herself. Now, the thing that I couldn't figure out is the wife on the Event Horizon, the first one? She's not, right?
No, she's not, but it's implied that she is. And that seems to be, to me, when I started watching, is like, oh yeah, she was. That's why he wants to go out there so bad.
Yeah, that's what I thought, because the first thing that you see is her without any eyes.
Right. Yep.
And I thought that was an exclusively Event Horizon thing.
Right.
unless the idea is that, you know, he's being pulled by the ship.
Well,
point, anyway, I don't know.
If we're to take the sort of story at heart, it does seem like the ship is able to take control of people because it takes control of Baby Bear too when he goes to kill himself.
Yeah.
So the ship has the ability to mind control people. It chooses not to do it to everybody for whatever reason.
Right.
To me, thematically, it makes more sense if Weir is going out there to find his dead wife that he feels guilty about killing her because of what the Event Horizon went through.
Yep.
And he goes out there and he slowly loses his mind and realizes that he deserves to be. The other thing about this movie is that it seems like they cut all of the sort of thematic relevance of people feeling they need to be punished for something.
Mm-hmm.
Because the very ending scene is before when Miller's fighting Weir, right? And he hits the thing and he blows up the ship.
Yep.
Weir is screaming at him, "Do you see? Do you see?" And Miller gives this, "I can see." Like, it makes it, the line seems like it's written and performed as though it means something in context of what the movie has been going on about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he finally sees that he needs to have penance for what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his sacrifice at the end. But there's no, that's not pushed anywhere else in the movie.
Yeah, I think that's, I think you do get into a problem area there too, where I think to drive that home, your focus would have needed to be more on Miller throughout the movie, and it's really not. Because there's really not anybody who is, I don't know, not really. There's not really. I guess Weir is the closest thing to a main character who has a through line that you're following the entire way.
Yes.
And yeah, for Miller to have that sort of turn at the end, or well, not turn, but to lean into that line and for that to be a thematic thing that's being driven home, I think you need more time spent with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's definitely now that you're saying all this, yeah, there's definitely some stuff in there that was not. I bet the original script for this movie is really good.
Right.
or at least better than what we ended up with.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's I would have to imagine that that's true as well. I also feel that Miller's thing needs to be a bigger event than some random guy he knew dying.
Right, right.
Basically dying in the way that Picard left Jack Crusher to die. to tie that in. I feel it's not impressive enough. Like he worked with a guy. It's not like it was a family member or anything like that.
Yeah.
It was just a lot.
It seems like it should be more like, you know, he got a whole ship full of people killed or something like that. Something with a little bit more weight to it.
Yeah.
Not that the loss of a single life is any less important than the loss of many others. But
No, the death of an ant deserves a funeral.
Unless you're Spock, and then the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
I can't remember now. There was a T-shirt that made fun of that line, and I thought it was funny. But let's see here. I guess that the way to go from here would be
Can I just say one more thing about Weir?
Yeah, sure.
So my thing with Weir is, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like all the stuff with his wife is unnecessary. Or at least the way that it ends up playing out, I think, should have been different. I think, because just based on the design of the Event Horizon, which he designed, right?
Yes, exactly. I was going to mention this.
You've got a ship that's in the shape of a giant cross.
Yep.
That has, you know, very interesting designs built into it, like the main windshield, for lack of a better term, is also in the shape of a giant cross.
Yep.
The room that the gravity drive is in is literally just a room full of spikes for some reason.
Yep.
There's an intent of design there that I feel like should be a lot more occultish. So basically, like, you know how in Ghostbusters, the guy who designed Dana Barrett's building did it for the purpose of bringing Gozer?
Yes, yep.
That's what the Event Horizon should be, as far as I'm concerned. It should Weir built this giant key for the purpose of getting into this other, you know. This movie's also kind of like, it like skirts the edge of Lovecraftian, but it doesn't really get into it. Like that's the kind of stuff that I would prefer to see. Like, this machine is built for some sort of otherworldly or occultish purpose that he knows is not the... does not have the best of intentions.
Sure.
Whether or not he's straight up evil could be debatable, but I feel like it should be more like he knows what it does or what he wants it to do, and he's trying to activate it regardless of anybody else's well-being. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Like, he wants to bring Gozer with this ship. He doesn't care. He doesn't know what Gozer is. He just wants Gozer to show up.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, and I think I'd agree with that. I'd also say that I could also go the route of he doesn't have like 100% information about what he's doing.
Exactly.
Here.
Yes. Yeah.
Like he knows this is going to do what he thinks it's going to do, but the symbolism of the design and everything can just sort of thematically tie into it. It's not like he has the intention of sort of bringing hell on Earth, basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it could be a good side effect, and then his guilt about it is the whole drive behind everything else. Just the design. Like, I'm surprised they didn't have a line. They probably did before it was cut, where the characters don't mention, you know, like a sort of sarcastic line about like interesting design choice, Dr. Yeah. Weir, on these spiked doors that you've got here. This is an interesting space choice.
And there's like no, excuse me, there's no, he doesn't become a malevolent force until he becomes a malevolent force, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Like he until he gets taken over by the ship. So I was expecting there to be more like, more of that stuff where he's doing stuff, if not behind the scenes, but, you know, he's flipping switches he knows needs to be flipped when nobody's looking. That kind of, you know, yeah. Something where he's trying to, he has his own goal in mind. Like, because if you really want to get down to it, there's no reason why he's on this ship other than he built the gravity drive.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, why yeah. is he's not there? He's not integral to rescuing everybody, I guess, just to make sure, see if the ship works. But, like, I feel like he needs to have some more, that needs to be more of, like, a cover for why he's actually there, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, because they have that, they have a relatively pointless scene where when they first discover the Event Horizon, Miller sends everybody over, and Weir's like, I'm going too. And Miller says, no, you can't go. But he gets very upset that he can't go. And,
yeah.
But there's no reason why he should be that upset about it.
Right.
Because he sees everything alien style through the cameras of everyone else that's walking around. Yeah, I feel that his through line is just really one of the weaker acts here. And I think it ties into the whole, the movie as it stands now is not 100% sure what track it's trying to take. And I mm-hmm. don't know if that's because they cut material that ties it all together or they don't really know in the first place. Like, do you think that what they're seeing is like literally hell? Like, do you think it matters? Like, they speak Latin there for some reason, which is interesting.
Well, I mean, I thought that was supposed to be the captain of the other ship.
Just the captain is enamored with Latin.
Well, because when they're watching the captain's log, the yep. last thing he does before it goes all shitty is he says that some Latin phrase. I forget what it is. So I assumed that was supposed to be him.
Okay. Do you think that the movie is better or worse that they have the level of religious sort of discussion?
Well, I think you get into a weird area like you do with Hellraiser, where in Hellraiser the Cenobites are from quote unquote hell.
Yep.
But there's not any, like, that's just the only word that there is to describe it. There's really, how else do you describe where they're from?
Sure.
And I think you do the same. I think they do the same kind of thing here, where it's like, you know, if you were to present human beings with thousands of years of Judeo-Christian background with whatever this awful torture dimension is, they would probably refer to it as hell.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether or not that means it's literally the Christian interpretation of hell is a completely different discussion.
Sure, sure.
So I actually think there's, it's fairly non-religious. It has a fairly non-religious approach to the entire concept, except for using that word. Is there much other? I can't remember there being much other religious talk or iconography, except for what's his name, Sean Pertwee, with the cross that he puts in his mouth when he's nervous.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even realize that they. Once things start to go to hell in a handbasket, they start saying things like, God help us all, a little bit more.
Oh, do they? Yeah.
Yeah. that's about it. But no one outright comes out and says, we can solve this problem by reading the Bible right now. You know, right. Like that never comes up.
There is actually, there's no magic book in this movie, which I'm a little surprised at. Because, it's my favorite device ever. The magic book is always my favorite thing. It's very, for everything that happens, it is actually fairly explicitly science-based.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as you look past the crazy torture dimension and the yeah. people seeing ghosts and people on fire and stuff. But
yeah, it's, I think I agree. I think that this is the right amount of sort of religious reference where they acknowledge that this is basically, at least symbolically or metaphorically, this is hell to them. They don't draw on any. I think the only thing that sort of goes against that is if you're considering the fact that being somebody with a troubled issue is more is somehow affected by this world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that seems to draw on the Christian interpretation of hell, mm-hmm. where you're being actively punished for things that you've done.
Mm-hmm.
They don't come out right out and say that, but they kind of hint at it through these character storylines. And I think those character storylines are important enough where they need to do it.
Yeah, and I'm actually kind of surprised none of the characters on the ship are overly religious to the point where there's a scene where they have like some sort of explanation.
Right.
Where, you know, they turn to Jason Isaacs and he's like, no, as it says in the Bible, blah, 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 blah. This is literally we're in hell. Like one of those kind of things.
Yeah, there's always the character in that kind of movie who starts out sort of as a scientist with slight religious overtones and then breaks halfway through and they become sort of a fundamentalist about it.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
They adopt that kind of line of thinking. And I'm glad the movie doesn't do that. I think it would be a little bit shittier if it ended with that, like, you know, Miller comes to, like, embrace religion or something at the very
right,
end.
Right.
I think his sacrifice is a fitting enough thing, even though his sacrifice doesn't really come from anywhere. I don't feel that it's particularly earned. It's a nice move on his part. I also got a Sunshine vibe from this one a little bit, just how it ends.
Yeah, I got a Sunshine vibe from a lot of it, actually. The ending definitely, but just I don't know if it's because they're fairly similar plot setups, which I guess they're actually really similar plot setups now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
Except Sunshine is a much better movie.
Yeah, Sunshine. They know that they're going to die. This one, there's the slight chance they can get out of there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sunshine, if people don't know, is the Danny Boyle movie about people on Earth trying to restart the sun. So they send like a suicide mission to fix the sun problem. And it kind of, what happens in Sunshine is that the third act is very controversial, I mm-hmm. suppose, for some mm-hmm. people. And I feel this one doesn't go quite to that extreme, but the third act of this movie is a lot of people getting thrown around in slow motion and screaming.
Lots of gas and debris getting sprayed everywhere.
Yeah, and lots of like a monster chasing after people. Which I don't think it impacts it nearly as much as it impacts Sunshine, because I think Sunshine is more of a drastic change in tone.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
But this one, I don't know. I guess it's because the Weir character, when he goes full-blown evil, kind of makes a little bit more sense in terms of narrative than Sunshine does.
Yeah.
Even though Sunshine is more religiously themed than
mm-hmm.
this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sunshine's more, well, it's, ironically, Sunshine is a little bit more religiously themed, but it's more about a guy just going nuts.
Yes, at the same time, yeah.
Whereas this one is, Event Horizon is less religiously themed, but more about a guy literally being taken over by some sort of extra-dimensional, otherworldly force.
Yeah, that's true. They split the difference, I guess.
put them together and you have one really great movie.
Basically just intercut them. Oh man, I think Event Horizon's music is probably a little bit of a bigger letdown, I suppose. Sunshine's,
but the theme at the end of whatever that song is they play at the end over the credits of Event Horizon is just all the worst parts of the 90s put together.
Yeah, it's really inappropriate. This is like Prodigy timing, I think. This is when like Prodigy
right,
was at its
yeah.
height. So they put it like a Euro dance beat at the end of the movie, and it's like, this is not the right music right now. You need something.
It's like a movie scored very traditionally with, you know, an orchestral score, and then the credits come, and it's just like the Chemical Brothers.
Right. Yeah, and for on an ending that's resulted in someone going to hell and two other people basically going crazy, and you're not exactly sure. So, yeah, let's talk about that. What does the ending mean to you, if anything?
Which part? The very, very end or when they get sucked into the hole?
We'll take it from the point where Miller's sacrificed. So Miller gets his sacrifice. We have a sequence where the lady, gets woken up, and it's revealed that she's in a dream, and because Weir reveals himself and says, I'm back, basically.
Right.
And then you smash cut to the actual, or, you know, quote-unquote actual rescue, where they're being, Cooper, Justin, and her are being rescued, and as the rescuers are trying to tend to her, the door's shut on mm-hmm. the room. Did you think that meant anything, or did you think that it didn't mean anything?
I didn't particularly think it meant anything. I just felt like they needed a way to get out of it, the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could read into it. They could be implying that Miller or the whatever the extra dimensional force is still there. and then it wasn't, it's not necessarily the ship, but so, I don't know. So I guess you could get into that stuff, but I just think they just needed a way to get out of the movie.
Yeah, I think I sort of agree. I think they were just trying
like the Carrie ending.
Yeah, I think they were trying to just close it, but they did it in a way that's a little bit too symbolic.
Yeah,
it makes you think, like, what was the point of having the door shut like that?
Well, my favorite part about that is when she starts freaking out and the space fireman or whatever he is starts yelling for a sedative.
Yep.
And he's yelling back through the doorway. There's two other firemen just standing there, not moving. And then the camera keeps pulling back, and he just keeps yelling.
Yeah.
But there's nobody there. I don't know who. It's like one of the other guys should be like, okay, hold on, I'll go get it. Like,
sorry, Bob.
They just stand there and they don't move. They're like, yeah, someone should really get her a sedative.
It's the life pro tip. If you need someone to call 911, don't just scream it. You point at somebody in the crowd, and then they will call 911 because people won't do it otherwise.
Right.
So it's that kind of thing. You need to scream at that guy. Yeah, I think the ending is okay. It does that sort of, these kind of movies have a 90% chance of doing the fake out right before the ending. Mm-hmm. And that's what they do here.
I'm a little disappointed that they don't stay on the ship. Once Cooper and not Laura Dern get blown free, you see the rest of the Event Horizon get sucked into the wormhole, but you're just kind of watching it from like 150,000 miles away.
Yes.
You know, they don't stay with Miller on the ship, which I thought was kind of weird. But
yeah, that's true. Which almost implies that you think he might have gotten off. Or so, if you don't see the character go, I mean, I don't think that's what happened. I think it's surprising that they didn't show him.
Yeah, or like, I don't know, show some reaction of him seeing what's on the other, like getting a glimpse of what's on the other side or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's another case where I feel like if Miller had been, there had been more character to him, or even there had been more character to Weir, that was really tightly written and tightly and sharply drawn, that you would need to do that, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Outside of that, the other ending thing that I kind of like, for some reason, I find the shot where you look at Stark, the not Lord Dern character, where she's looking out the window and she says Miller after he sacrificed himself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bizarrely creepy shot. I don't know what they did, but it's fucking terrifying. Whatever they did to make it look that way. She has this sort of glazed over look and is just looking out the window into nothingness. Mm. It always strikes me as a well done shot.
This movie also features not Ashley Judd.
Yep, that's true. And the doctor reminds me of someone who I can't quite pinpoint at this point, but I can't remember.
I love that guy. He pops up in all sorts of stuff. He was the villain in The Patriot.
Oh, sure. Yep.
He's like the most evil British person ever to live.
A lot of the actors here are British, I think, in this movie, which is interesting. Julie Richardson is, Jason Isaacs.
And Sean Pertwee is English as well, yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Whose dad was the third Doctor on Doctor Who, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah. Interesting.
And he now currently plays Alfred on the Batman TV show Gotham.
Oh, there we go. It's all coming. It's all, they're all still out there, still being productive, I guess, at this point. Yeah, I don't think I had much else to talk about this. I think that the movie really just sort of rests on its aesthetic a lot. You know, it's like the design of the Event Horizon is really sort of interesting and bizarre, and just like, you know, as soon as you walk on the ship, you know that something wrong is going to go there, even though it was designed this way.
Yeah.
Medical looks like a torture room, basically, the medical room.
Right. I think where this, I don't know if you could say it drops the ball, but like, okay, this is unfair, but let's compare this movie to Alien or Aliens even, or both. Okay. Of them, right. Alien doesn't, the Nostromo isn't designed to be a scary place, innately, But it becomes scary as things happen and, you know, the lights start changing and all this, and there's the creatures on the ship. It's all dictated by the mood of the story.
Yep.
The Event Horizon is clearly designed to be a scary place.
Yes, yeah.
And I think it's a little, I don't know, lazy isn't the word. But, I mean, it's a very interestingly designed ship, but it's clearly...
just too obviously...
Yeah, it's a flying torture chamber.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, like I was saying, if they had made that design more intentional, then I would be completely fine with it. But since it's like, well, this is a scary movie, the ship needs to be scary looking, then I don't know, I feel like that's kind of a shortcut. And also, comparing it to Alien again, it does, there's too much going on, I think, in Event Horizon to really focus in on that stuff we were talking about as far as the characters. And all. There's so many characters, and it's, everybody has something that they regret or whatever, and then, you know, there's a whole other ship of people that they're thinking about. Whereas in Alien, you've got Sigourney Weaver's character. All of the other characters are pretty clearly drawn, but you don't really know anything about them.
Yeah.
And it's a much tighter, focused story. I think if Event Horizon had a more focused story, it would be a better movie.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think I'd agree that the focus has to be on Weir and his sort of character arc. Miller can be fine the way he is now if Weir is stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the other characters should have varyingly smaller degrees of storyline behind them. You don't need to tell me their entire backstory, but like at least have it be clear. If you want the theme of this movie to be about the sort of regret of like, you know, quote unquote sinful behavior, they need a little bit of story, but you need to focus on Weir and Miller as the 1A, 1B, and just go from there. And yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Besides,
I liked the. Their Jeffrey's tube that was basically, I guess, just the Matrix, where Weir starts crawling through it's like a vent in the wall of the gravity drive, but it's the walls of the vent are made out of glowing green circuit boards for some reason.
But then when he opens it up, it's like an old timey circuit board. He just basically pulls out like a little circuit board and it's shorting out. Yeah, I like the design of that. It's one of those things, it doesn't make a lot of sense, is like, why would they design this thing this way, which I guess ties into the whole Event Horizon thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I did like that that combination of, and it's creepy, just the way that they bring his wife into it, that's kind of a creepy.
Right.
They do a lot of good work with the lighting, once they start calling everything the dark, like the dark is coming for us, and like this is the scene where Weir walks into the darkness, and that's sort of his turn.
I agree, but I hate it when characters start talking that way. Like when Baby Bear there starts saying, like, what the hell does he start saying? I wrote it down. Hold on a second.
When he's in the
When he's in the airlock and he's like, "Did you hear it? The other place, the dark place, is calling to me." I hate that shit because it's just I don't know. It's just it's so first draft creepy.
Yes.
And I really hate it when people start talking in like those really oblique, undefined ways. I don't know. It's a pet peeve of mine.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes sense. It's certainly lazy, and it feels like it's sort of sledgehammery at the same time. Like clearly this is a bad time. You don't need to refer to it as so blandly just evil.
That stuff for me goes into naming things too. Like anytime they're like. You know, you've got a horror movie and there's creatures and they're like, those people are the other. I hate shit like that.
It's a little bit too close to like you've read Carl Jung in the past 2 years and you're like, you know what? I'm going to call these things the other because that is just a perfect symbolism of what they are in my psyche. Yeah. Yeah. I'd agree.
I think where it falls apart a little bit is, you put up a teaser image on Twitter. And I was looking at that and I didn't remember that from the movie, even though that's the entire thing, but, I didn't remember what the gravity drive looked like. And that's that still photo. I was like, oh, that's really cool looking. And even when he's climbing through the Matrix tube there, I was thinking, what, you know, if you take a still of this, it's really cool looking. Or if it's, like, the art design is pretty good. Like, the ship is cool looking. The sick bay area is, yeah, it looks like a slaughterhouse, but it's pretty cool looking. Like, the gurneys and stuff are cool looking.
There's a contrast between the Lewis and Clark and the
definitely,
Event Horizon.
Yeah. And what was the other thing I really liked? There's a part of the ship that has like these, it look almost looks like subway tiles, but they're metal.
Yeah.
And they kind of go up and kind of curve up into the ceiling, and that's really cool looking. And I even like the stuff when not Ashley Judd is running after her ghost son.
Yeah.
There's a period before she falls into the hole where she runs down a corridor, and the entire corridor and the doorway is shaped like a coffin.
Yeah, and it's made out of like sheet metal or something.
Yeah.
It's like very industrial looking. Yeah.
Yeah, yep. It's a pretty cool looking movie. Despite the fact that it has that like look that every sci-fi movie from 1990 to 1999 had. I don't know if it was the cameras or something to do with the visual effects, but they all look the same.
Yeah, I think they're all just so influenced by Alien.
Yeah, that's probably
like
too.
they can't avoid that kind of look. Like just the clean, because it's that the Alien thing is the clean white look is like the things are okay look.
Right.
And then you move into dark industrial metal and that's when things go to shit.
Right.
And they do that here where the Lewis and Clark has the white aesthetic and you move into Event Horizon, which is spiky and dark.
Right. But yeah, it has the visual aspect of it is good, but it doesn't, for me anyway, it doesn't have the meat to back it up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think we can close it there. I think I'd agree. Like, I like the way it looks. To me, this is a sort of perfect cable TV movie. I always watch it if it's just on. And I mean that also in the sense that it's not great because it's – but it's great in the sense that it's engaging to watch as sort of like a half-paying attention thing if it's on TV and just pop into it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you expect too much of it, it kind of falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that's kind of what this is. Like, if you're just watching it in the background, you're kind of entertained by it. But to me, it's missing that overall narrative thread that it needs to tie this into, like, hell, regret, and people accepting punishment at the very end.
Yeah, they do. They set it up a lot like Alien, almost identically to Alien, actually, with, you know, the stuff on the Lewis and Clark when they're all eating and sitting around the table. But it gets really complex, or not complex isn't the word, but a lot of stuff starts happening. And I don't think they really give you the groundwork for that stuff at the beginning to really make it pay off. I mean, it would be weird to have everybody sit around the table and be like, hey, what one thing right. do you really regret from your life? Well, you know, this one time, this guy I knew, he got caught on fire and I left him to die. How about you? Well, my son is
in a wheelchair.
Yeah, or something. I'm not sure. I missed his birthday again. Like, that would be weird, but I don't know. I feel like they needed to, if they had leaned into that stuff a little bit more at the front, I think it would have made the stuff that starts happening later make a lot more sense and feel a lot less tacked on.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Totally. Totally agree. And I also agree that I think that the, you know, I said before that the studio thought it was too gory and they asked them to cut it. I think this has the right amount of seeing the hell world.
Yeah, I think so too. I think anything more and it's going to look really weird and cheesy.
Yeah.
My favorite thing in this movie, realistically, I feel like they could have easily avoided this, is when they turn the gravity back on and the frozen body shatters all over the floor.
Yep.
A, who is going to clean that up? And B, you think maybe they could have, like, held on to that body so that wouldn't happen when they turned the gravity back on?
Put a mattress underneath it or something. Yeah, I know. Just, yeah, they were very distant. There's a lot of stuff floating around and they needed to. Or why can't you slowly increase the gravity?
Yeah,
you know, put it at half and have it lightly float down instead.
Also, I mean, I guess you could explain this with the weird mind control powers of the ship or whatever. But why, after hearing what the gravity drive does and how complex a machine and groundbreaking technology it is, why would you stick your hand in it?
Yeah. And he does it like the Matrix, where it's like a little bit of goo sticks onto him as he pulls it out.
Yeah, these guys are supposed to be facts. Like scientists, or at least smart people, right?
I 100% agree with it. It doesn't seem that that's the best thing to do with an experimental technology that caused the death of the crew, to go poke your hand into it.
Like, I know in Prometheus, people give Prometheus a lot of shit for there's a similar scene where one of the guys on the alien planet interacts with this, you know, alien life form in a way that you would think, well, why would you touch anything on this alien planet?
He's also a biologist or something. Right. Isn't he? He's like a specialist in this, and you'd think that he would be the person who would be like, oh, stand back, don't go near that thing.
Well, but at the same time, I can understand being on this completely alien planet, being excited and coming across a new thing and wanting to engage it somehow. I could buy that a lot more than, hey, this gravity drive thing that may have killed an entire ship full of people also rips a hole in the space-time continuum. Don't fucking touch it when you see it.
Well, I think the problem is Weir was so goddamn cagey about his information that these people were unaware of what the dangers were. Weir spends about 15 minutes of the movie saying that things are too complicated to explain and then explains them. Or Miller is demanding answers from him and he doesn't give them for some reason.
Well, it's like if someone... It's like if someone was on a steam engine train and they made their way to the engine room after getting instructions from the guy who built the train being like, oh yeah, that fire in the middle of the train, that's how the train goes.
Yep.
And then you get to the engine room and you just stick your hand into the fire.
I agree. Although I will say there was a note that one of the deleted scenes is there's a reason in the original cut why he does it, as opposed to just sort of a ho-hum sticking his finger into it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's some sort of some reason he's drawn to go too close to it and he falls into it or something. Huh.
Well, so I was thinking, I mean, I'm surprised that wasn't Weir, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that would make more sense. And no one else would need to know that it happened,
right?
You know what? Yeah.
Or at the very least, I mean, you could still play things. I mean, maybe that would be a little. Well, I guess it's too much like Alien as it is, having the guy fall in and, you know, then anyway. But if Weir fell into it and then pulled him out and that was when he started going crazy, I think that would make a little more sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. 100%. 100% agree.
Because he knows how it works. So he's just going to reach his hand in there and just tighten a lug nut.
Yeah, and he's like, I just got to tighten the screw back here, guys. It's like, oh, fuck. And it just goes in.
Readjust the angle of one of these giant spikes on the wall.
It's a very precise machine.
Even the doors, as you get closer to the gravity drive, the doors get more aggressive.
Yeah, they have spiked teeth. For no particular. They don't even interlock because they go over each other, so the teeth are there for no particular reason.
I can't believe nobody got killed by a door in this movie.
Yes, Miller comes close, but no one is just stabbed by the architecture.
I was 100% sure in my mind that when he pulls Jolie Richardson through the door, that door is going to cut her in half.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, but he's not leaving anybody behind.
A lot of people survive in this movie, actually, too. I guess
one
three.
More than I would expect.
Yeah.
I would expect Justin and the woman, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised Cooper made it through, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Not even just because of the you know, the sci-fi trope of the black guy has to die, but I guess Dr. or Mr. Miller serves that function in this one. Although he survives long enough.
I do want to say we didn't talk at all about how Lawrence Fishburne is just really good in everything. I thought he was great in this movie. He had a lot of silly things to say, and he sold them all really well.
Yeah, he also looks good when he's sort of creeping through a scary scene where you're waiting for the jump scare.
Right.
He does that really well. I thought Sam Neill was actually pretty good in relatively what he needs to do.
He's pretty much consistently good. He also cornered the market for characters who start bleeding from their eyes in this area of the 90s. Because I couldn't help but think of In the Mouth of Madness while I was watching this movie, because it's kind of similar.
He does. He does it so well, so well.
So I remember one other sort of tangent. I saw this movie for the first time shortly before Predators came out. That sequel, the Predator sequel from, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Adrian
Brody.
Yes. Yeah. And I remember reading that there was a surprise cameo in the movie, and I had already found out that it was Lawrence Fishburne. I think the spoilers, sorry. Whatever I was reading mentioned that it was Lawrence Fishburne, but continued to act as though there was another aspect to it, like his character was some sort of a surprise.
Sure.
So when I watched, after I watched this, I was like, oh my God, I really hope Lawrence Fishburne's character in Predators is Captain Miller from Event Horizon. Like, you get sucked in through that black hole and he ends up on the Predator planet. That would have been the best crossover ever.
It's purgatory. You go there as you're waiting for your ultimate decision. Yeah, that's too bad. He wasn't anything more than that, right? He was just a surprise actor cameo.
Yeah, he was just a guy, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah, who went crazy. But, oh, don't they all? Well, liberate tutte me. I think that's what they say.
Sure.
Also, that doctor...
It's a dead language. Nobody uses it anyway.
That doctor should have... He really sort of missed he missed quite an important difference in yeah. those things, I think. He really should have done a better job the first time around.
That stuff is the closest thing they get to like a magic book sequence, where there's the thing where someone has to decipher something, and there's always one person that can do it.
Yep.
And they decipher it once, and they're like, oh, that's not too bad. But then, sure enough, they forgot to dot the I or read the umlaut. And which completely changes the meaning of whatever the word is.
Right. Oh, it's those endings. The verb conjugations like, will always get you.
I don't know if you ever saw Alien versus Predator.
Yes.
Which was a really awful movie. But my favorite part of that movie, so, is they've got this, they find this Antarctic or whatever city that is ridiculously made up of all of the civilizations of the world as though this is where they all came from.
Yep.
And there's a language there that is this language that nobody in the history of Earth has ever seen. Or I should say, since it was used millions of years ago in this civilization. So no one has any idea how you would read this. Not only does one guy in the team know how to read it, there's a second guy who can read it better than the first guy.
Learning's improved. I know it's such a tough sell. They sell the hell out of it though, right?
I
suppose it would be the same as you know, the Predator number system when they like blow themselves up.
Yep.
You can somehow sort of understand that it's ticking down, which is interesting. You know what I mean? Like
at least a little more intuitive.
Hey, this is definitely not counting up. This appears to be counting down. I wonder what's going to happen. Cool. Well, that's it, I think, for Event Horizon, which I enjoy. But, you know, it's not Event Horizon. So I'm going to be fading out that song over this. Clay, thanks very much for coming on to talk about it.
Oh, no problem. Our friend Pat was really sad he couldn't join us for this because he's a big fan of this movie. But
oh, really? Interesting. Yeah, Pat Antle.
Jeopardy champion Patrick Antle, friend of the show.
It was the final Jeopardy question. What was Miller waiting for, or whatever the hell would you'd pop up
not,
with this?
Yeah, not on so the second episode he was on, otherwise he would have won.
That's too bad. Event Horizon, it's a modern-day classic from 1997.
Sure, yeah, sure, that's what it is.
I have do you think that a movie is... This is probably just sort of confirmation bias, but I feel like whenever there's a British-American sci-fi movie, it's usually fairly strong to me for some reason.
When you say British American, what do you mean?
It's usually funded by two
companies,
like Sunshine is an example. Yeah, okay. Like it's always sort of British production house backed by an American studio,
right,
or something. Mm-hmm. And usually, I don't know, I can't think of any too many of them, but I always feel like they're very strong.
Well,
entries.
Alien is one, I think.
Oh, yeah, Alien.
I
would
guess,
be one.
I think. I don't know. Well, there's a lot of British people behind that movie.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, I don't know. Sunshine definitely is one, but yeah, that's the only one I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, Alien's a 79 British-American thing. Yeah, definitely. Huh. Well, anyway, I don't know. I'm sure someone is going to send me a list of 5 million terrible British-American films that have come
out.
What
I can tell you that this movie is not, I can tell you definitively that this movie is not The Sphere, starring Dustin Hoffman and Sharon Stone, which as a kid, I always got these two movies confused because they have very similar looks.
The Sphere was my first. I remember the Sphere. When did Sphere come out? What
year? I think it's same, around the same time, I think.
Sphere movie. I have to know it just because what would be my first. Yeah, okay. It came out in 98. So this is my second biggest, earliest memory of walking out of a theater being disappointed. Sphere, I read the Crichton book beforehand. And it was the I was a young kid. How old? I would have been 15, I guess. So I wasn't that young. But I mean, I remember walking out of the movie being like, oh, they fucked it up. Like that the book was so much better than the movie, mm-hmm. and the movie's just terrible.
I've actually never seen it, but by all accounts, I've seen that it's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's 12% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What year did Event Horizon come out?
97.
Okay, yeah, because I definitely remember Event Horizon coming out, and then shortly thereafter Sphere coming out, and me thinking, oh, that just looks like Event Horizon.
Yeah.
I have no idea if they're at all linked. I don't even know what Sphere is about. They both have spheres in them, I guess.
Yeah, they both have a sphere that people get sucked into.
Well, there you go.
So that's a very similar thing. Although the difference in Sphere, the difference is Event Horizon, you go to hell, and Sphere is you come out with the ability to do whatever you want by thinking it. So
okay.
That's the difference. All right, guys, thank you very much. I guess we'll be back next month with Sphere. And outside of that, 12%, we got to just keep going further. Yeah, guys, thanks very much, patrons, for backing. We're getting close to having to do this twice a month, which is, I say that we're getting close to having to do it, but I'd appreciate it. That'd be good. That's the $50 tier on Patreon. You guys all support, so don't expect you guys to do anything more, but any additional people who come on will eventually kick us towards that tier. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for listening to the Star Trek podcast. Thank you very much. Very much indeed. And we'll be back next month. See ya.
Ben Horizon, take me with you. Captain Miller, won't you take my hand?